I'm Stephen Petro. This is the spot where you would normally hear a word from our sponsors. And you know, if you want to get a mention here, let's talk. In the meantime, I'll just ask you to please subscribe, share this episode with friends, and write a review in iTunes. Now here's our show. Welcome to The Civilist, a no-flame zone. We debate and talk about today's hot-button issues with kindness, respect, and yes, civility. The Civilist is a production of WUNC and PRI. I'm your host, Stephen Petro. In this episode, we're talking about gender-neutral pronouns, they, them, and their, and why, with so many problems in the world, these little words matter so much. We'll talk about the honorific mix. That's MX, which is replacing Mr. and Ms. for some.
I mean, if you have to have an honorific at all, there should be honorifics that actually apply to everyone.
I'll also be answering your questions. In my inbox today, what to do about political rants and raves on Facebook. And he's so vain. A fellow whose nose is a mess from a chemical peel seeks party advice.
Do I give my hosts a heads up? Or do I buy those Groucho Marx glasses with the plastic nose?
All that and more coming right up. So what's a civilist anyway? An ethicist? A therapist? A jurist? Kind of, but not really. You won't find civilist in the dictionary anymore because real civilists have become endangered species. The word is now actually obsolete. I hate the old Webster's defines cliche, but here's the definition. A person who adheres to a moral code in line with our laws, with a dollop of good citizenship on top. Kind of like a Girl Scout.
I'll do my best to be honest and fair, friendly and helpful, considerate and caring, courageous and strong, and responsible for what I say and do.
And you thought they were all thin mints and tagalongs. So why are these precepts so hard to come by and to live by? Today we desperately struggle to find common ground in so many debates. I'm talking about this year's election, the gun debate, LGBTQ rights, the right to live, and the right to die. We go at each other at the dinner table and online. It's ugly, and it's only getting worse. My own quest for civility started years ago, when I decided a little prodding with a pen wouldn't hurt. Well, actually, I used a keyboard. Over the years, I've written hundreds of advice columns in the Washington Post, the New York Times, and USA Today. You might also know me from my books or my radio and TV appearances. We're going to try to lead by example here. We'll be having some challenging conversations about politics, the culture wars, and our own personal ethical dilemmas. The goal seems simple enough, to relearn the lost arts of listening, conversation, and respectful engagement. I'm a gay man, and I've long given advice about LGBTQ issues. I want to foster mutual understanding. For instance, what do you call two married men? Boyfriends? Partners? Husbands? The best answer is husbands, because that's the correct word to refer to a married man, straight or gay. It shows respect to the couple and the institution of marriage. Now, how about this dilemma? What pronoun do you use for a transgender woman like Caitlyn Jenner? He, she, it? The answer is she. Ms. Jenner identifies as a woman, and we call women she in the third person. But don't try to pigeonhole me to LGBTQ matters. How would you handle these situations? What do you do when you're in a group of white people and someone uses the N-word? Does context or intent matter? I'll have a lot to say about the power of language in the podcasts to come. Finally, this conundrum. A man sits in a hospital room with his dying mother. He picks up his phone and starts to tweet about her, her illness. Is this a violation of her privacy or a way to connect in a time of need? Who decides? NPR's Scott Simon found himself exactly in that predicament in 2013. He spoke with Audie Cornish on All Things Considered.
I don't think it's any less sacred because it was shared with a lot of people. And it must be said, you know, there was a lot of stuff that I didn't share. There was a lot of stuff that I will tell only my wife and maybe someday my children. I certainly had a sense of proportion and delicacy. I don't think my mother knew much about Twitter or social media platforms, but I would read her an occasional message from someone in Australia, someone in Great Britain or Singapore, and she was very touched. And I didn't tweet anything and wouldn't have that I didn't think she would be totally comfortable with.
All of this is uncharted territory. One last thought. It's actually a quote from James M. Barry, the creator of Peter Pan. Always be a little kinder than necessary. I actually don't think that's so hard. So let's get going, shall we? Let's call this segment New Rules for Better Behavior. In each podcast, we pick a few listener questions, I consult with a couple of my wise friends, and then we tell you what to do. Later on, I'll tell you how to submit questions of your own. Get those pencils ready now. Today, I have two guest experts on the line with me. Kim Severson is the domestic correspondent for the New York Times. She joins me from Georgia Public Broadcasting in Atlanta. And Shireen Marisol Meraji hosts NPR's Code Switch podcast and is at NPR West in Culver City, California.
Ladies, thanks to both of you for joining me. And let me just ask this. Is it okay for me to call you ladies in this day and age?
I actually flinched.
Well, and
so
I
guess
I
don't like it. I don't know.
I do think that there is a time and a place for referring to somebody as a lady. And I live in the South and, you know, people do say ladies a lot. I think when it's used to keep us sisters down, it may not be a good idea. So in that case, I would say it's probably better to use women or sisters.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Don't worry. I'm not going to make that mistake again.
Don't.
And I'm just going to throw my producer, you know, right under the bus here. You know, she wrote my script.
Rebecca.
No. Yeah, Rebecca. A lady. Let's move on. Kim, you're a domestic correspondent. So does that mean you do the cooking and laundry for fun outside of work?
It sort of does, I think. It's a designation that to kind of imply that I cover domestic affairs in the United States. I do write about food and cooking, so they came up with this title, domestic correspondent. But I kind of like it because, in fact, I do like to do all the cooking at my house. Laundry, not so much.
Not so much. And Shireen, the same question for you. You know, who are you outside of work? And I hear you're planning a wedding.
I am planning a wedding, but every other week I want to cancel the wedding because it's so frustrating. Actually, this week is fine. We have a caterer, so I'm high. Next week, something terrible is going to happen, and then I'm going to want to cancel and not get married and then kick him out of the house, which every other week I'm like, you got to go. This isn't going to work. So I feel sorry for him, but yeah.
I do,
planning
too.
A wedding.
I do, too, already. So let's hear our first listener question, and then we can each weigh in.
So how can a person manage a political discussion on social media? Right now, whenever I post something political, whether it's in favor of a candidate or just a well-written political analysis I'd like my friends to read, it sets off a firestorm of often vituperative reactions from friends who are partisans of one candidate or another. How can I moderate this discussion and maybe even take sides without becoming the victim of a flamethrower?
The victim of a flamethrower. I fielded a similar question in one of my USA Today columns recently, and I can attest to the fact that folks are really troubled by these types of situations. Shireen, why don't you go first and tell me what you think our listener should do?
First of all, as a journalist, I stay far away from posting anything political on Facebook. But, you know, if you're just a regular civilian and you're going to post politically charged content on your Facebook page, you need to gird yourself for the drama that's going to ensue in the comments section. This is what happens. So if you don't like that, don't post politically charged content. And if you want to keep posting, know it's going to happen. And if people are getting out of hand, remove their comments and DM them later and say, hey, buddy, that's not cool. Don't do that on my page. You have the right to police your page. So that's my advice.
And for everyone who doesn't know what DM is, that's direct message. So Kim, agree, disagree?
Well, I agree to a degree. I think that, yeah, if you can't stand the heat, don't post. That's kind of a good thing. But I do like the idea that you're trying to engage and develop a community. I sense that this listener wants to kind of have a debate of sorts, in which case they might work on some of their moderation skills. And if somebody's crazy, you can come up with some very clever flip comments like, you know, why do you hate America or something. But, you know, you could play with it a little bit, play with the form and go, well, John, I see you got on the wrong side of the bed. But Bob over here, this could be interesting. Bob, do you agree with him? Like, you could moderate it, which is a kind of a lovely neutral place to be. And set some tone for your page. And then the people who really get out of hand, again, you can just delete their comments, which is the beauty of the whole thing. And then there's always the powerful unfriending, the great passive-aggressive move of all time.
Well, there's unfollow, which becomes, you know, sort of the first default.
Oh, right.
And that, you know,
right.
You can unfollow somebody so you don't see their posts and they don't know that. And then, you know, the nuclear option is unfriending or blocking.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think the larger problem is we don't talk to each other on social media. We all just sort of, you know, post what we think as though there's no engagement, there's no discussion. I don't think people on the other side listen. And so it becomes explosive. And that seems to me a really lost opportunity to engage each other and to learn from each other. And even this unfollowing and blocking, you know, that's not what civil discourse is about, in my view. My advice to folks is, you know, in general, keep your posts to facts and figures and things that are genuinely funny and not mean. Don't make it personal. Avoid rants. And for some people, you just might want to take a break from social media until, I don't know, until January of next year, perhaps. Now, let's go on to our next question, which is a very sensitive one.
I have a good friend who has lost two babies in the past 4 years. And I'm always wondering what her next step is. How can I ask her and let her know that I'm thinking about her without possibly bringing up her painful memories?
So, Kim, would you take this one on first?
Sure. I had two strong thoughts about this. First is, truly, someone's personal pain is really none of anyone else's business. And I think the caller really wants to know what her next step is. But really, why? Is that just curiosity or true caring? Although I do sense that this person really does care about her friend. So my tact would be to come up alongside this woman's ship a little bit. And I would call her up and say, no, it's been a couple of hard years for you. I have made this beautiful pie, and I would love to come over and share it with you and have a cup of tea and just, you know, enjoy this food with you, or invite her over to a meal. But I think showing up at someone's house with something that you've made is a lovely way to say I care, and just say, you know, I know you've been through a hard time. And then if she wants to talk, she will. And I would never bring it up directly, though. But I think it's fine to say, no, this has been a hard time for you, and I just want to come over and show you that I care with a pie or a cake or lunch.
I think that's lovely. And sometimes just showing up, being present is all that we need to do. Shireen, you're in a different part of the country, out on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what would your advice be?
I actually thought she should give her a call and just see if she wants to hang out, do something fun, just the two of you, you know, just say, hey, you know, I know things have been stressful. I, too, was a little caught up with the wondering what her next step is part of the question. I agree with Kim. It's kind of none of your business. And if she wants to bring that up to you, she will. But do not mention it. Do not ask her what her next steps are. Just call her up and say, hey, let's chill. Let's hang out.
You know, I agree with both of you. And, you know, and that phrase, I'm wondering, is always a signal. I find it a signal to myself when I'm wondering about that. It's sort of a curiosity that is probably not my own business. So, yeah, I would say when I start to hear that, I hold back. And the other part of this is, when someone does have news, they will tell you, they will ask you, they will find a way to reach out. You know, in addition to showing up, sometimes just being available to listen is the most important thing that we can do. So, question number three.
Here's a dilemma I'm about to face, literally. I have to have a chemical peel done on my nose to deal with precancerous stuff, not just a spot, but the whole nose. I'm going to be a mess for at least 3 weeks, and I'm going to a somewhat fancy party, one that I don't want to miss, during treatment. My nose won't be at its worst for the party, but it's not going to be pretty. So here's the question, actually a series of questions. Do I give my host a heads up, or do I just pretend that nothing's wrong? Or do I buy those Groucho Marx glasses with the plastic nose? Or do I just let them ask me if they decide to ask? It would be easier if I weren't vain, but I'm vain. I'm really vain. So hope you have some advice for me. Thanks.
He's so vain, yes. Shireen, what's your take?
I always like those Groucho Marx glasses. They're fun. They're very hipster chic. Everyone likes the black rim and the little mustache now, so he could rock that for sure. No, but really, how bad is this really going to be? Sometimes we think things are way worse than they are. Like if I have a pimple on my nose, that's all I can see when I look in the mirror. And obviously this dude is looking in the mirror all the time. So he's just probably staring at whatever's going on with his nose. Whereas when you're talking to people, they're looking at your whole face. They're looking at your hand gestures. It might not be that bad. So ask someone you trust for a second opinion. They may tell you, oh, it's nothing. And if it's nothing, don't mention it. Don't bring it up. Don't draw attention. And if it's really bad, stay home and chill and watch Netflix.
Kim, how about you?
My first thought was, again, like, how bad can it be? But I thought there's probably two approaches here. One is maybe this person knows a really good makeup artist or would want to pay money to a good makeup artist to come and do their face a little bit if they're allowed to have makeup on that thing. So they'll walk in with confidence, because I think you've got to walk into the situation with confidence. You've got to own that messed up nose of yours, because then you're going to feel better, right? Wear something you look fabulous in, maybe a little makeup, and have one good statement in your back pocket if someone asks, and they can just be like, oh my God, are you okay? Or, and you could say, I'm engaged in some self-care. No one wants cancer, you know? And then people will shut up when you mention cancer and they'll never talk to you about it again.
You know, my thoughts on this were, you know, could you possibly miss a party? You know?
Right.
I think you can. So, sisters, thanks for joining me today, and I hope you'll come back again soon.
My pleasure.
I learned.
Anytime, brother.
Shireen Marisol Meraji hosts NPR's Code Switch podcast. Kim Severson writes for The New York Times. We'd love to hear your questions about how to navigate tricky social situations. Please send a voice memo with your message to thecivilistpodcast@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 919-263-0929. Anonymity promised. Now it's time to shift gears to what we're calling our deeper dive segment. Here's another listener question.
What is the best way to speak about someone who you don't know very well and whose gender expression is very ambiguous? I don't know if I should just avoid using pronouns altogether. Yeah, curious about that.
Ah, the pronoun war is a conundrum for many. If you're like me, say 2 years ago, when it comes to gender, you probably think the world is binary. There are women, there are men, a woman's pronouns are she or her, and a man's he or him. But more and more of us don't identify as either male or female, what's often called non-binary. Recently, I went to Duke University to talk to some students in an LGBT history class. I was surprised by how they introduced themselves.
My name's Casey. My pronouns are she, her, hers.
My name is Jeff. I use he, him, his.
I'm Tanner. I use he, him, his.
My name is Erica, and my pronouns are she, her, and hers.
My name is Jiho, and I use they, them, their.
My name is Nan, and I use they, them, their.
That's right, they. It's becoming the go-to pronoun among transgender and gender-fluid people and their allies. I've learned that it can be hurtful to use an incorrect pronoun, especially to those who may have spent years trying to understand their gender identity or have faced discrimination. To learn more, I interviewed Tony Award-nominated singer and transgender activist Justin Vivian Bond, who goes by Viv. Viv says they is not only the most respectful pronoun, it's also got potential to be the most accurate.
Well, I like the term they and them because as a trans person, I don't identify as either male or female, and so I think that it's appropriate to use they and them for anyone.
Most of us were taught that they is only used as a plural. When I wrote a Washington Post column about gender-neutral pronouns not long ago, the debate from both grammarians and anti-trans people was, I'm going to just say it was intense. And here's one example of the comments. Quote, old school here, the equipment determines the grammar, at least if I'm the author. If it has a penis, it's a he. If it has a vagina, it's a she. If it has neither, it qualifies as an it, unquote. So what do you think when you hear comments like that, and why are gender-neutral pronouns so controversial?
Well, that person is clearly already using gender-neutral language because it described other people as it three times in a row. It, she, it, he, it, it. So I think you should get it together and refer to everyone as it if that's the way that person sees people as things. But I will say that I have a friend who is old school but not willfully ignorant, who is very into grammar, and she had a lot of problems with they until I described to her that, you know, if a person is transgender and they identify as female, then you call that person she. If they are transgender and they identify as male and they wish to be called he, then you call them he. If a person is transgender and identifies as transgender, they are embodying a multiplicity of genders, and so to call them they is not referring to them as more than one person, but they as more than one gender. So it's a plurality of genders embodied by one person.
I do find that there's a line between, you know, so-called political correctness, which can sometimes take things too far, and being respectful, but it's a fine line and it's a hard line.
I think that has a lot to do with intention, really. And most often you can tell what someone's intention is. You can be perhaps sometimes overly sensitive, but I think it's better to be aware that, you know, your intentions will betray you.
Absolutely. So I have a neighbor who is gender fluid and has told me and others, quote, their pronouns are they and their instead of she and her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a hard time remembering this in practice. So what do I do when I make a mistake, and what do you say when this happens to you? Because it must.
Well, to be honest, I've made the same mistake.
So should I apologize when I
think
make a
so.
Mistake?
Sure. Oh, I'm sorry. I realize I just said the wrong mm-hmm. pronoun, and I apologize. I don't think you have to feel upset about it or, you know, be embarrassed. I just think to directly say, I realize I made a mistake.
You use the title Mix, which is spelled MX, instead of mm-hmm. Mr. or Ms. That honorific is much more accepted in the UK than in the US. And I know, for instance, if I applied for a driver's license in London, I could check off Mix instead of Mr. on the form. Is Mix the wave of the future as Ms. was in the 1970s?
It seems to be. It's being adopted by a lot of newspapers, and the publishing industry is coming around to it, and it's just come so far so fast. And I think it's hitting the U.S., and people are starting to really take a look at it as a viable option. I mean, if you have to have an honorific at all, there should be honorifics that actually apply to everyone.
And maybe we can just get rid of honorifics because they don't really seem to serve that much of a purpose these days.
No, not really. Although I will say that I actually do like the honorific of Mix because, you know, Miss or Mrs. indicates someone's marital status. And Ms. says, you know, you don't want to be judged by your marital status. Whereas I think a lot of people do not necessarily know who is trans or not. And if you want people to know that you're trans so that they can be more sensitive to who you are, I think it's nice to be able to give them an indication.
So I just finished a column for the Post where I wrote that bathrooms are the next battleground for LGBT acceptance, especially when it comes to the T, which stands for transgender. Obviously, I'm talking about, quote, bathroom panic legislation. For instance, bills that seek to bar transgender women from using the women's restroom. What's been your experience of this, and how concerned are you about this type of legislation?
Well, obviously, any legislation that is intended to harm or oppress or make the lives of trans people more difficult is completely unacceptable. I do feel that people should have the opportunity and the choice to self-identify and use whatever restroom they feel is appropriate for themselves. I also feel that architects and designers and urban planners need to start taking into consideration that there needs to be more than just the option of male and female restrooms. I am pleased that in most airports now they have male, female, they also have handicapped, and they have family restrooms so that you have the option of going someplace where you can feel safe and not have to be declarative, and that can really avoid a lot of problems. And then, of course, there's gender-neutral bathrooms where each stall has a door, and there's a common area where people wash their hands and primp. And then there can be, of course, men's room with urinals. But I feel like, you know, in general, it's a self-created problem that doesn't even really need to exist. With a few common sense changes, it wouldn't even be an issue.
Mix Bond, thanks so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's almost a joy to be able to talk about these things intelligently and with compassion.
Justin Vivian Bond is a performance artist and transgender activist. They join me from Argo Studios.
To the moon child, dancing in the moon glow. Blonde hair swinging in blue highlights. Old crone singing to the gold child. Come live this mystery tonight.
That's all for this episode. The Civilist Podcast is a production of WUNC, PRI, and me. My producer is Rebecca Martinez. Mark Blasco wrote our theme song. I'm Stephen Petro. Thanks for listening. It's my policy to be authentic and say what I mean. So I'm going to be intentional here by asking you to subscribe, share, and review The Civilist. Yep, that's it. The numbers are important, as are the reviews you write in iTunes. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.